Hello, I'm Katie Piper, and welcome to my podcast, Katie Piper's Extraordinary People. Each episode, I'll meet an amazing person with an incredible story who faced adversity and came through the other side to inspire others. Today, I'm talking to Kelly Knox, an extraordinary model and activist who was born without her left forearm. We talk about where she gets her strength and resilience from, how she fought prejudice and rejection to build an amazing modelling career, and how she hopes to use her platform to change society's perception of people with visible differences. Thank you very much for joining me today, Kelly.
Thank you, Katie. It's great to be here. I really appreciate it.
Now, like me, you're 34 years old.
I am.
And your life growing up, I guess it wasn't the same as your peers. What was different about your childhood?
It's so strange because the word disabled was never really used in my family. I think growing up for me, I always knew my arm wasn't there, my left arm.
So you were born without your left arm?
I was born like it. So they don't know why it happens, but it's most common on the left-hand side and most common with girls. Even now, they don't really know why it happens. But when I'm asked this question of why did it happen, I always say that before I came to Earth, I chose this body to be born into to help society change perceptions.
Did you always have that train of thought? Could you always reframe it and think like that? Or was that something that happened in your adult life that you were able to see it in that way?
It's so strange because I never come from like a spiritual family, but growing up since I was a little girl, I always knew that my beauty, my power, my wisdom, everything, my magic came from my soul. It's like I always knew that I was more than a body and that my body could never define me. And I think that's why I never felt disabled, because I thought I'm more than a body. My body's not what makes me who I am. So growing up, never used the word disabled. I had, you know, lots of friends, and like my mum didn't use it, my dad, my brothers. So it wasn't really until I started modelling that I suddenly felt myself labelled. I felt myself put into a box and stereotyped, and that was very challenging for me.
Yeah, because almost they would actually, in I suppose, use your disability as a, oh, we're using a disabled model. Yeah. And it would actually be a feature, I suppose, almost, would it?
Yeah, definitely. I think when I first started, like 10 years ago, it certainly was more about tokenism, I guess, because there wasn't any models out there like me working in the fashion industry.
What did your parents say when you said you wanted to get into modelling? I mean, how young were you when you said you wanted to do that?
Well, I was about 23 when I was on the show. And
this is Britain's Next Top Model, isn't it?
Britain's Missing Top Model.
Missing Top Model, yeah. Right.
So I saw the competition just on an ad on Facebook. And before that, I never wanted to be a model. In fact, I just entered the competition for a laugh. So came home from work one day and said to my mum, well, can you just take some like candid shots of me and let's send it to the production company. Did that.
And she was supportive. She wasn't anxious or worried. She didn't fear rejection. She was really, you know, behind you and pro.
Yeah, I think my mum, both my parents, they always really believed in me. I think I've always been pretty fearless, like growing up, always very courageous. And if I wanted to do anything, I always did it. I never thought about, oh, how will I do this? And even with the modelling thing, I never thought to myself, oh, there aren't anybody out there in fashion, in magazines, in advertising campaigns like me. So how am I going to be received? I just knew that my attitude was probably a little bit different than quite a lot of disabled people at that time, especially like out there in the media, because when I saw images of like disabled people, I really can't stand saying that word because I just feel like no connection to it.
Well, it's a weird word because it starts as dis. So it already takes away any empowerment.
Completely. It's so like negative. And I did a talk and I mentioned in the talk, like the word association with like disabled, it's like broken, done in, done for, lame, maimed, wrecked, out of action. I thought, well, that is not describing me as a person or my personality.
And the opposite to disabled is able.
Exactly.
So does that mean you're not able? I mean, it's quite a depressing barrier to put on somebody before they've even started, really, isn't it?
Completely. That's why I'm all about like the social model of disability now. So the social model is about you're not disabled by your impairment, but you're disabled by the attitudes of society or lack of access and inclusion, which is more what disabled people suffer from, like,
rather than the physical body.
Completely.
Yeah. So growing up, did you struggle at school?
No, because I didn't really, I don't think it bothered me. I think when I was a teenager, there was a moment when I was maybe 13, 14, where I suddenly realised that was very different.
Right.
And it became more of an issue, but it didn't last long. I remember laying in my bed at night and wishing that I could wake up and the next day I'd have two hands. I mean, that's just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I do believe in miracles, but not that kind of miracle.
Yeah. And were you ever offered a prosthetic?
Oh, God, yeah, all throughout my life. But it was never my cup of tea. I mean, I remember being very, very young, going to Roehampton Hospital with my mum. And the only reason why I agreed to go in there, obviously, I'm the child, so I can't tell my mum what I want to do at such a young age.
I feel like you totally would have.
Oh, actually, I did. Yeah. But they had a rocking horse there, and that's the only thing that I liked about going to the hospital. I remember seeing this baby, and I mean, I could have been about six or something at the time, and this baby had no hands and no legs, and I remember crying as a child. It really, really affected me, and I just felt, I don't know, it's just so much emotion and sadness, and it used to upset me seeing people without limbs, even though that was also me.
But is that because you didn't class yourself as somebody without a limb? Was it because you just had accepted who you'd always been, and you didn't feel a sense? Because sometimes if we have something that society says is missing, we live with a sense of loss, like almost like a bereavement. Like,
yeah.
Would you say you've ever experienced those feelings, or has it not been how you felt about your situation?
Certainly not when I was a child. And then with like the prosthetic, it was always so like hard and like very orange, very impractical, very disabling. Like, in fact, me and my friend, we just used to pull it off and on to make farting noises. We were just kids and just having fun with it. We used to draw on it. I would never ever wear it. In fact, there's a story. I was very young because I was in a buggy, and my mum had me in the pushchair. We was in the post office, and I decided to rip my false arm off.
Oh my goodness!
And throw it across the floor.
Wow!
And like, all these people just kind of pointing and like looking, like my poor mum.
That'll give the neighbours something to talk about.
But I think that's how I felt about it. It's like completely, even before I knew about society and how I could have been received, it was just like, this is not me. It's gone.
Right.
So that was kind of my relationship with it, and just never got on with it. But I think with a false arm, I feel like it's only there to make you appear normal, because it has no practical, I mean, now with like bionics and stuff, I mean, they do have uses, still not for me, but I think like back then
it was there for other people's benefit, so they don't
feel
awkward.
Exactly, yeah. Katie, spot on.
Yeah.
And like, I don't want to be normalised. Just accept me for my raw, natural, authentic, weird, wonderful beauty.
Yeah, and it's really quite a mature outlook to be able to have as a child. I mean, what about when you were going through puberty, you know, as a young girl, becoming a teenager, discovering boys, people are dating. Did it stand in your way? Did it, like, hinder you? Did it affect your confidence in any way?
When I liked boys back then, I just think kind of got what I wanted. I think I always had that confidence. Like, it never really affected me in that way, but I was definitely self-conscious when I was a teenager of it. Mm. I think maybe that's why, I don't know, I think I always was maybe extra confident when I was a teenager, because I would maybe was hiding the fact that I was suddenly self-conscious, where before all my life I never felt like that about me. So like, going back to the time when I was lying in bed wishing I could wake up with two hands, around that time was quite difficult, and I wished I could be like everybody else.
So confidence, without a doubt, it does make us sexy. Do you think a high level of confidence can make a visible difference invisible? Like, you're so confident, it can stop people seeing that you don't, they forget that you don't have your left arm.
Yeah, I was at Reading Festival on Friday with Primark, and one of the other guys, one of the influencers that were on the trip, he said, I didn't even notice your arm.
Yeah.
Because he was watching my TED talk, and then he suddenly realised.
I genuinely believe that. Yeah.
It's like, they just can't see it because of the confidence.
Mm-hmm. And also because society would say you're disabled, can't do certain things, probably won't be confident. That will be the expectation. So if you don't fit that ideal, then maybe you're not disabled.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So, and I struggle with that as well. It's like, where do I place myself? Because even I went to like an event a few years ago now, and I remember seeing this image of like a disabled person on the advertising, and it just didn't represent what it means to be disabled in like whatever that year was, say 2016. Mm-hmm. It was very dated, very unfashionable, very frumpy. I'm thinking like, that's how maybe society will see a disabled person. How about using someone who's, you know, fashionable, very empowering, positive, beautiful, and then that will make more of an impact. It's like, if you're disabled, you have to like kind of be in the background or shoved under the carpet, or maybe only come out once a year for Halloween or every 4 years for the Paralympics, when that's what I want to change.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, if society's thoughts about you are, your life's always going to be different because you don't have a left arm, you almost don't try and you surrender to that ideal of like, well, this is what people like me, this is as far as we go, this is our ceiling.
100%.
You're only 34 and you said there about going to Reading Festival with Primark. Well, I follow you on Instagram. You didn't just go to Reading Festival with Primark. You're basically the massive blown up poster centre fashion model. You weren't there just because you were disabled. You are stunning. You're a great model. And, you know, it's a really powerful image. Talk to me about this career. I mean, you said you started on the show Missing Next Top Model.
Yeah.
And how was the show for you? What were the other models like with you?
When I was about to go in the house, I thought, what the hell am I doing? Like, it might sound really strange, but I never knew like any disabled people. So to suddenly be put in a house where I'm going to be labelled as disabled and be around other disabled people, I thought, this is going to be really tough.
And just share a house with strangers.
I know, big strangers, brother. Yeah.
And a shower.
And a shower, yeah. But I made a really good friend on there called Rebecca. She was born with one leg, and like, we became really, really, really close friends.
Did you win the show?
I did, yeah.
Oh, you did? You were the winner, right?
Yeah. See, okay. I'm so humble.
Like, I would have totally got that in sooner.
Quite shy, really.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Models can be quite shy in their personal life.
Yeah,
so
totally.
So you won that show. Was that a real, I mean, I want to say boost, but it sounded like you didn't need a boost.
Yeah. I wish I could say yes, but I felt completely let down. Like, I won this show. Like, I thought, you know, I come from a working class family. I thought my life is going to change. I'm going to, you know, have this success, be doing something that I love, be making a difference to society, making a difference to my life and other people's lives in the process. But when I won the show, and I remember in the final, I didn't, even when they said my name that I won, I didn't really feel that excited because I felt like nothing's going to happen. I kind of like had that inner knowing.
So you knew then?
I knew instantly. I was signed with an agency called Take Two, and within 6 months they went into liquidation.
Why is that? They were just not a good business model.
I think just like, yeah, money issues.
And did you get ripped off financially then?
No. I got one job and it wasn't even like a high paid job. I think I had one casting. It was just ridiculous.
Which is crazy because that was a big show. I remember that show. Yeah. It was a big show on the BBC.
Yeah.
High profile, you know, like you should have been like catapulted into paid work within mainstream society.
100%. Just wasn't like that at all. I felt like I was kicked in the gutter. And at that time as well, I left my job thinking that I'm going to have this new career. So I kind of had to find my own feet around. I think probably a few months into it or after, I met Jane Gulpin. She was a fashion producer for Channel 4 on How to Look Good Naked with Gok Wan.
Right, okay.
I met Jane, I met Gok, he loved me. Then I was one of his Gokettes for like two or three series of How to Look Good Naked. And that kind of helped me finding my feet in the fashion industry. Everything was new to me. I mean, I didn't know anything about the fashion industry and how to be in it. I didn't know how to be disabled. It's like, what the hell am I doing? It was just completely all new, all fresh, very challenging.
And without a disability, it's a dog-eat-dog world.
Oh, God, yeah.
An overwhelming world. So here you are, like, as a young adult, you've faced adversity all your life, but overcome it. And now you get your supposed big break and actually, all over again, you're having to fight.
Yeah, definitely. Completely just fell, just let down, and like I was in the gutter. It was a very, very hard time for me.
Yeah. Because it felt like tokenism, do you think? Like a show that ticked the box, maybe?
Yeah, because I felt like if people believed in it that much, then I wouldn't have struggled and as much. I would have had the support. I would have had like a career opportunity. And that just wasn't the case. I mean, if it was like Britain's Next Top Model or something like that, you get offered like a proper contract, mm-hmm. you get front cover of a magazine. And when I won the show, I was shot by the amazing Rankin, and the images were just absolutely just so beautiful, mm-hmm. so fashion, like high fashion. I wore like Prada and Chanel. It was yeah. incredible. And I only found out till recently they were meant to be, one image was meant to be on the front cover of Marie Claire. And they pulled it.
Why? Because they were scared?
Scared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't want to take the risk.
Totally.
That yeah. the mag won't sell.
Yeah, completely.
And that's the brutal truth about
that's
it.
That's the brutal
it?
Truth, yeah.
See, it makes me so angry because it makes the whole show pointless.
Yeah.
Because the whole point is to challenge perception and to change the covers, to start exercising our mind, to open our mind. And if you're too scared to take the risk, what's the point?
Exactly. See, the Primark campaign I just did, my image was their top image ever on Primark with 115,000 likes.
Good.
Yes.
Good.
That's
yes.
what we want.
We want that. We want yeah. that. I mean, it reminds me of like sometimes, particularly in the past, I would sit and do a long interview with a journalist and I felt like they really got me. And then I would see the piece and the headline would be like, ex burn acid model. And
I'm like, disgusting.
What does that even mean? That yeah. sounds like somebody that stands in Robert Dias by like a shelf of acid.
Yeah.
Like, what are you?
It's so insulting.
Yeah. Or, and then even in the text, it'd be like, and Katie lives with horrific burns. And I'm like, God. Well, they're horrific because society says they're horrific, but actually they're just different markings and different texture.
Exactly.
So if you want to keep calling them horrific, then yes, they'll be labelled as that.
That's about them, not about you, Katie, isn't it? It's about yeah. their own insecurities and own fears. Nothing about your beauty or your body, because you're so amazingly beautiful in every way.
But for me, it's also really lazy because it's oh, this is the way we've always been conditioned to think. You're a freak, you're scary, you're horrific. And you're like, well, am I? Like, actually, you're just brought up that way to watch the Disney film where the baddie has the scar. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Why don't you challenge your own mindset and see what's in front of you?
Completely.
And write a completely different article, because what's in front of you is possibly brand new and you've never been faced with it. But no, people don't like risk.
No.
So Marie Claire will just do what they've always done because yeah. it sells. And in a way, when you're at the other end of that, when you're the model, like that's a harsh reality, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So how did you carry on modelling, like from that letdown, like, and now like you are the poster girl in Primark? Like, you said you met Gok. Was that yeah. quite a defining moment then?
I think so, because like I wasn't working up to that point. So meeting Gok was quite, it kind of entered me back into the fashion industry, got me out there on TV, you know, Channel 4, and working on a great programme and doing something where, you know, Gok was helping women to be more loving and caring towards their own body. Mm-hmm. It was very empowering. So I was very grateful and happy to be part of that. But it still wasn't easy. I still wasn't like getting work just like thrown at me.
So how did you keep going in the face of that rejection?
I have no idea, Katie. It was really, really tough. I felt so depressed for a long time, yeah. but I just had to continue. I also had to get a full-time job because my bills wouldn't pay itself. So right. like in between. Like,
did you have a child at this point?
No.
Okay.
So yeah, that would have been very, very hard.
Yeah, of course.
But it was still difficult. So, you know, knowing that I could be doing so much and, you know, contributing to society in such a powerful and empowering way, just to be working like a normal job, I felt just so wasted, and I would cry because of that. Mm-hmm. Like, what am I doing here? This isn't me. This isn't what I chose to do to come here. I'm so much like more than this. I need to make a difference to society. So I was
it's
just
like
using
a real passion that you had.
Oh
as
God,
well.
Yeah, completely. Because yeah. I wanted to give up so many times. But there was just something inside of myself saying, this isn't about you. This mm-hmm. is about other people, about you need to be helping other people to make a difference to other people's lives. You need to help other people to see the light within themselves and to shine and sparkle. And I thought, if I just give up now, then where's the resilience in that? I've always been resilient. Mm-hmm. I've always been courageous. I've always been pretty fearless. So I need to let that warrior spirit just keep on just pushing me through. And even at times where I wanted to give up, just don't do it. I mean, in that time, my brother passed away. He was only
really?
36. He had
my
cancer.
Wow.
My dad also passed away a few years after. Like, it
oh
was
gosh.
Really, really tough times. But
yeah. Do you think that was sent to test you then? I mean, that's a huge loss.
Yeah. I mean, my brother, so this was 2011, so not really long after mm-hmm. the show, really. And that was around the time where I wasn't getting much work and just fighting my corner, really.
Because a lot of people would have actually said enough's enough, and they would have given up, maybe gone within themselves and surrendered to the label and the limitation.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely lost when that happened to my brother, because he had, you know, had a family, had children, he had a wife. Like, he was only 36. I felt like giving up. Mm-hmm. I felt like I completely lost faith and lost hope. Well, how can this happen to such a beautiful man? But he was very supportive of me. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like I needed to be doing it for him as well. Like, I wanted to make him proud.
Mm-hmm. So that was a part of your motivation?
100%, yeah. I think no matter what happens in our lives, like, pain doesn't happen to you. Or suffering, it happens for you.
Oh my God, I've got to write that down. That's so good.
It enables you to grow. Like, and mm-hmm. I think the more we'd suffer or experience pain in our lives, it's what we chose to experience, and it's for our own soul growth. And I think the most strongest and beautiful people have gone through lots of suffering.
It's interesting, the statement you said about, you know, these rejections and people not helping you and all this adversity you were coming up against, reminding yourself it wasn't about you and it was about those people. And I suppose it's a bit like when we break up in, you know, in a relationship. I don't know, if we get dumped or it doesn't work out, we always have to remember, or if someone cheats on us, it's not about us, it's about them, it's their insecurity, it's a reflection of them. And that, even though I know that message, I know myself how hard it is to hold on to that. If somebody says something about you or rejects you, you have to hold on to it being a reflection of them and not you. But it takes tremendous inner core strength to really cling on to that in those dark times.
Yeah, definitely.
And modelling is rejection anyway, no matter what you look like, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all about perfection, I guess. But this is why I'm so passionate about being visible out in the fashion industry, because you don't have to be perfect. Like, mm-hmm. perfection doesn't exist. If you just continue to aspire to this image of perfection, then you're just going to always be unhappy, because you're never going to get there. You're always going to want something more, or to be more perfect. And it's just unachievable.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere. No one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes, or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
You may have heard of the podcast Juicy Scoop. Wondered what it is? Why aren't you listening? Well, I'm its host. Created it, been doing it for 7 years. I'm Heather McDonald of Juicy Scoop with Heather McDonald. Now, I could tell you why you should be listening to my show, but my listeners wanted to write the ad for me, and here are some of the things they said. Not your regular Juicy podcast. Catch up on all the juicy topics from Hollywood and pop culture to true crime and beyond. Heather McDonald's Juicy Scoop always has great guests, great laughs, and great gossip. It's a comedian's take on the hottest headlines. Juicy Scoop is the pop culture news you want to hear. No BS, no filter, no filler. Raw, real, and in the moment. Throw in the hilarity of amazing comedians that you will instantly be obsessed with, a juicy crime story, and a dash of normal life in LA moments, and you've got yourself an amazing week of Juicy Scoop. Two episodes every week, every Tuesday and Thursday. It will never let you down.
I'd love to know when you saw a change, because so I've been burnt for 10 years and which isn't that long, really. It's only since I was 24. So all my teens and at school, I didn't know what it was like to live with a visible difference. And I feel like I've noticed a change in the last 5-6 years, maybe. Do you feel like, from your career in the beginning to where your career is at now, have you noticed a significant change in perception?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have made some slow progress, but there is still a very long way to go. I mean, like, in the States, they just had like amazing Olay campaign where they used two visibly different models as part of it. And I think people want to be empowered by the images they see now. They don't want to feel oppressed. They want to see realness. They want to see authentic people. They want to see diversity.
Why though? Because it's not that we've got more disabled people than ever.
Yeah.
Why do you think people's minds are opening up? What do you think's changed?
I don't think diversity is a new beauty ideal now, because it represents the world we live in. It's like modern Britain, And people want to relate to people. We want to feel empowered. We want to know we don't have to be this perfect version of Instagram where people are filtered and stuff like that. People want to be seen for who they are. Like I did, I put a tweet out a few weeks ago and I just said, like, I want my soul to be seen and my body to be celebrated. And like, I know you've commented before on my post about you're learning something new every day when I do my spiritual stuff.
Yeah, sometimes I read your posts and I could be anywhere, usually in a soft play with my kids looking at me. And your posts stop me in my track. Sometimes they give me a lump in my throat.
Oh,
like, yeah, because it's
thank you.
But it's just so important and it's so relatable. Mm. And sometimes I find it so frustrating. The only thing that's stopping people like you and I feeling complete or other people seeing us as complete is just this made up opinion.
Yeah.
I think you posted something about don't let society
strip you.
That's it, strip you of your beauty.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I remember feeling so ugly after what happened to me and literally like a monster. But I wasn't dead. I was still alive and I still had loads of things I could give and do. But society made me feel like such a misfit.
Mm,
and it was just an opinion. And because there was no one else out there visibly burnt, classed as beautiful, successful, attractive, there was... Mm. I mean, did you have any role models growing up?
Not really, no. I mean, I used to read all the really good like fashion magazines, like, you know, teenage ones like Shout and Bliss and Sugar. And but I never stopped to think, why isn't there somebody like with a visible difference like me? But I think now, if I was a teenager now, I would definitely feel like that if there wasn't any representation, because just the way society is with social media and everything.
Do you ever get down though? Like you're on Instagram.
Yeah.
And it can be quite an oversaturated place of facade, Photoshop, the best bits. Like, do you ever experience like feelings of... not depression, but, you know, just like sometimes it challenges your worth and your self-esteem?
I can't say I feel like that in terms of like not accepting my body or feeling that way about my body, but I just want more work. I want to be out there working all the time. That's what I get depressed or frustrated about, because even though I do like amazing campaigns like Primark and stuff, I want more. I want to be doing this like all the time.
Do you still feel like people are yet to catch on?
God, yeah, totally. I mean, like my life hasn't really changed like dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to be out there doing amazing things all the time. And why shouldn't I be?
But you're quite an ambitious person though, aren't you? Like, are you one of those people that's like... I guess that's how people become successful, because they never settle for second best. You know, they keep going. And
I'm so passionate about it, Katie. I just want to be out there, just making a difference to society, challenge people's perceptions about beauty and about disability, show people what it's like to be disabled in 2018. It's not people's perception of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a mum. I remember being pregnant and I went to a breastfeeding workshop, and like some mum, she came up to me and said, oh, how are you going to change a nappy? How are you going to do this? And I thought, like, I'm going to do it exactly how I've done everything else in my life. Because I think when you are different...
You adapt.
You just have a natural way of adapting to things. I think you're a natural problem solver. You're naturally creative. But again, it was about her, how she's going to cope.
Yeah, and she put that onto you.
She put that onto
that
me.
Anxiety.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. And I was fine. I just thought, okay, just done my own thing. And that's how it always was.
And what about having a son? I mean, your son's three. What's it been like with your son? Does he ask you questions?
No, not really. I mean, he loves my arm. When he was younger, he still loves Michael Jackson now, but he was really into Michael Jackson.
Oh, I'm a massive Michael Jackson fan. Okay.
So he used to like sing into my arm like it's a microphone.
Right. Okay.
And I think because it's quite soft and squishy, like he used to like touching it. And when he was very small, he'd be like sucking on it, like when he was like teething
like
and stuff.
A comfort thing.
Yeah.
That's an interesting spiritual connection.
Yeah.
The thing that the world says should hold you back and isn't lovable was his actual comforter.
Okay. I feel like I want to cry. That's so beautiful.
But it's true, isn't it? Like that brought your child security, safety and comfort.
Yeah.
And the world's trying to make you feel like that should hinder you and that's your flaw.
Yeah, completely.
I mean, does he ask you about accessibility in general? Does he say, like, my daughter will say to me, like, I have to wear like plastic tubing in my nose. So my daughter will say to me, where are my tubes? When am I getting my tubes? And I'm like, well, you know, you don't need them because you don't have problems with your breathing, and mummy's got problems with her breathing. And, you know, and that's how conversations will kind of evolve with us. I mean, does he ever ask you why he has two arms and you don't?
I did ask him, what does disabled mean, a while back? And he said, it means Cadbury's cream egg and a minion.
Oh my god, total innocence, basically.
Yeah,
then.
Completely. But I met with a friend and she wears a bionic arm, but straight away he wanted her to take her arm off.
Right.
Like, he wanted to see her natural, like, real arm. And, like, he felt uncomfortable with the bionic arm, where she said most children are more excited about what the bionic arm can do. But no, my son wanted to see her natural state.
That's
and to
so
feel her
interesting.
Arm.
Yeah, because he's used to his normal is what you've created.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's all about what our normal becomes, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's funny because obviously the way we met was at Bristol Fashion Week.
Yeah.
And it was school half term. So my daughter came up and she came backstage and it was Jack that she saw, Jack Ayres. So
yeah.
He's an amputee. He's got a prosthetic leg, and he was wearing shorts, and his prosthetic leg is just a metal, you know, didn't have like a flesh covering or anything. So straight away my daughter's like, oh my god, where's your leg? And I'm just like, okay, right, this is interesting. And he just spoke to her normally and said, well, actually when I was younger I lost my leg. And then she asked me about it in the hotel, and I said, oh, well, you know, like, obviously you notice something different about mummy, don't you? And it was, I'd just actually not long given birth to my second child, her baby sister. And she said, yeah, I noticed different stuff about mummy. I noticed you've got a big tummy and the baby's not even in there anymore. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's like body shaming me. And I was like, well, yeah. I was like, it's normal to have a big tummy after you have a baby. So, you know, she's noticing his prosthetic leg, but she's not noticing me with, like, 25% full thickness burns all over my face and upper body. So I guess burns has become my daughter's normal.
Yeah, same with Jensen. Like, this is his normal.
Yeah.
And this is why I feel it's so important for visible differences to be represented out there in fashion, in the beauty industry, like on TV, in the media, because then young people will see it.
Yeah.
And then it's normalised. I mean, CBeebies, they're so inclusive.
They are so inclusive. They're brilliant.
Yeah, they are brilliant.
And it's like, there's the proof. If the retailer could invest in you and believe in you, if the front covers of the magazines could believe in you, we could all be like our children.
Yeah.
And if we could, like, condition ourselves to see those things, if people have accidents, attacks, genetic conditions, we as a society could come together and make that not a problem.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, we've done it with race. We're doing it with race. We've come a long way with race.
Yeah.
We've come a long way with gender. Please, can we just do it with visible difference and disability?
Definitely the last barrier to break, 100%.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to ask you about what you would say to somebody that's struggling themselves at the moment, because you do have bucket loads of resilience and confidence. And actually, I'm going to come at you with a specific problem, because on the podcast, we encourage people through Instagram to email in with their situations. And there's a young girl, 26-year-old, she's emailed in and said, I'm a graphic designer. In 2017, my life completely changed and I went from being a healthy, active person to living with a disability. It was sepsis that she contracted, something she'd not heard of until that point. She said, I got extremely ill very quickly. I spent a lot of the year in hospital, and the sepsis resulted in me losing my left leg below the knee, my right leg reconstructed, and most of my fingers shortened. As you can imagine, it was a complete shock adapting to a new life, and it was hard. I feel that I've overcome the worst, but I'm constantly working my rehabilitation. She wanted to share her story with us, and I mean, she wants to raise awareness also of sepsis. But what would you say to, I mean, this girl's called Laura. And actually, I'm reading it and I actually know Laura's met me. I actually met Laura at Whitstone Hospital, and she's a strong, inspirational woman. But what would you say to not just Laura, but people like Laura? You know, for you, you were born with your condition. But when life changes and you're used to being told that any other way than normal is going to be a struggle, I mean, what advice would you give to somebody in facing that struggle?
I mean, I think if there was more visibility present out there in the media, then Laura definitely wouldn't feel that way about her own body. I mean, already she's overcome so much in her life. It just goes to show how adaptable, resilient, creative, and what an incredible woman she is, to even to get to this point where she is now. I do believe that everything that happens to us, like I said before, the pain, the suffering, it doesn't happen to you, it happens for you. Mm-hmm. And it's all about our own soul's growth and how we can be more softer, compassionate, more courageous and more wise. We do go through these things in life, but we can't be conditioned by the things that happen to us. Mm-hmm. Just know that we don't have to be perfect. Yes, life is going to change, but that's not a bad thing. Change is a natural part of life. It happens all the time in nature. Spring doesn't think about how summer's going to cope or autumn or winter. It just happens very naturally. And I think just having that self-belief in yourself that everything's going to be okay. You don't need to be perfect. And beauty is imperfection.
And it's such a beautiful way to look at it.
Yeah,
it really
totally.
Is.
Yeah. And just like Laura is obviously a very, very strong person. And like she has that gift to give to other people mm-hmm. as well. And I think when you accept the things that happen to us or how we are, then it makes things a lot easier.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I talked about Instagram and your page a lot and how much it inspired me. And I really believe surrounding yourself with positive messages and people that kind of have the same moral compass as you and the same beliefs as you can really help. So before we go, could you tell us where people can follow you and get more of your messaging? What's your Instagram and Twitter handle?
Thank you. Yes, my Instagram and Twitter is It's Kelly Knox, so ITS then Kelly Knox.
So guys, please follow Kelly for more inspiration and also a lot more spiritualism and positive messaging, which is what we actually need on social media. I could talk to you for hours and hours.
Me too.
Yeah. But thank you so much for just sharing, you know, almost actually just a small part of you and your life, because there is so much to you. But I've learned so much just sat opposite you here today. So
thanks, Katie.
Thank
I
you
love
for
you.
Giving. Oh, I love you too. Total love off. Thank you for giving your time
thank you.
Today.
Thank
Appreciate
you. It.
Thanks for listening to Katie Piper's Extraordinary People. If you haven't already, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, I'm talking to Johnny Benjamin, MBE, a mental health campaigner, author, and blogger. He talks about how he experienced mental health issues from the age of 3. He also discusses coming out to his parents and his campaign to find the man who saved his life during one of his worst bouts of depression. If you enjoyed this, please help us spread the word. Rate and review the show where you got this, or share on socials.